Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to the Roguecast. I'm your host, along with my other two hosts.
Yep. We never say who we are, but people may not just immediately know our voices.
I think the intro that we pre-recorded may have all that info.
Does that have all that info?
So you're saying you're the ringmaster of the group?
I'll do it again.
I'm the ringmaster of the group. I have a large top hat that hypnotizes people.
That's why we're always here today.
I assume that's what you meant.
But also, we recorded that probably 5 years ago, and our voices, we had puberty changed.
Did we?
A little.
Okay.
But
sometimes we're replaced by another person.
You are Randy Lander, store owner.
Yep.
We're the management team. I'm Dave.
Nick.
That's Nick. And now you know who we are. It's good to meet you.
We'll be your hosts.
Please come back and keep us afloat for a few more decades.
Join us, won't you, for this journey down Rogueway Lane.
That's what we need, is we need like these Twilight Zone.
Rogue Gallery Drive.
Oh, you're right. Rogue Gallery Circle.
We need a Rod Serling-style introduction to everyone. We need to figure out what the theme of it is. It's like, tonight, a certain comic is going to discover that it will find no friends at the Rogues Gallery. This comic is universally pilloried.
You may have noticed our intros are just usually like whatever nonsense we can come up with.
Whatever nonsense we can come up with.
I mean, Dave's throwing out Rod Serling nods.
I'm doing the best I can here. Do we want to talk about new games for the week?
Yeah, let's talk about new games. First, let's talk about, we started doing staff picks. This was a notion. So, basically, we are doing daily staff picks on our Facebook posts.
Yep. Correct.
You can go and see stuff we all like.
Do we need to get those on a couple other social media
probably
platforms?
We'll get to it at some point.
Yeah, we'll get to it at some point. But I'm sorry.
Just
go check it out on Facebook. Because I think we put up some really good stuff, and it's been a mixture of games, graphic novels, some single-issue comics.
Yep.
Let's go through just a few of them. What was the first one we put up?
You're going to put me on the spot here?
Okay, we'll go with what's up today.
So today is Transformers 1 and 2, recommended by Nick.
Yep.
That is the new Transformers series, which sees a third issue this very week. We're really very excited about it, and we've read some preview stuff and some of the things where they start to interact with the G.I. Joe's title. And we were very skeptical, but we really have kind of been won over.
I think I can safely say, and I think Randy will probably agree, that this is probably the best comic coming out right now.
It's my favorite comic right now.
I hesitate to say the best comic coming out, because I'm sure there's like some good stuff coming out that it's just I'm not like super into at the moment.
No, this is the best comic.
I'm not willing to call a toy comic the best comic, but it is the comic I'm most excited about, and that's a big thing. And it's also nice to be excited for a comic. I'll give you an example. I like James Tynion a lot.
Yep.
But I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to read The Deviant 2. I know I'm going to like it.
Yep.
It's going to be good. That's his creepy Christmas comic, if y'all haven't read it. It is messed up.
It is. It's very good.
But I'm excited about the Transformers in the way you kind of, that kid energy way.
Yeah.
In a good way.
I would rather see Starscream smush people.
Starscream is a maniac in it. He's a little Joe Pesci freak.
Yeah, he is.
So let's see. I put up a pick the other day that was also a sort of a license pick that for something that's having a moment right now, which is Godzilla.
Yep.
Very specifically, my pick was for the graphic novel. What's it called?
James Stokoe. Complete James Stokoe.
James Stokoe is a writer and artist, but you probably know him best for his art. Who does these just wildly detailed, intricate pieces of art. And he is obviously a Godzilla fan. He did a miniseries, and then he did one part of a Godzilla in Hell kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
and his was the best, too.
It was.
Both of those stories are amazing. The Half-Century War, which is the one that's in it, is one that spans decades, and it shows a guy who starts out as like a recruit in like the Japanese Army who encounters Godzilla when he's like 18 or 17 or something like that. And then over the decades, continues to have run-ins with him as he grows older, wiser, rises in the rank, and begins to... It's almost like that weird parasocial bonds that people form through social media. And he, like, half wonders if there is some strange connection between him and Godzilla. Like, it's a good story, and yet it doesn't, like... This is not some schlocky thing. This is Godzilla as a force of nature, and... I don't know that it's not probably as scary as he apparently is in Godzilla Minus One, but this is not a Godzilla who's pals with everybody, and so it's but it comes to what I think is a really cool conclusion. And we put up some board games.
Yep.
What was one of the board games we put up?
I don't remember.
Nick, do you remember what we put up?
Have we gotten to the board games?
We may not have gotten to the board games. Because I think you... the first weekend.
Because Serena did one for a graphic novel that I can't remember. You did D&D Endless Nights.
Look at these. We're hitting some other licenses.
But there will be
board games. But there have not been any just yet.
Well, just very briefly, and then we can move on. But the D&D Endless Nights is the nice omnibus collection from IDW. We've really been pretty happy with their D&D comics over the last several years by Jim Zub.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a series of miniseries with recurring characters, but very specifically for Baldur's Gate fans out there, with the popular supporting characters of Minsk and Boo as part of the team. And each miniseries kind of would zero in on kind of what big adventure was coming out then. So there's stuff in Avernus, that hellscape. There's Underdark stuff. There's big red dragons in there. There's stuff I'm sure in what's the Rime of the Frostmaiden area?
That was in the previous one.
Icewind Dale.
This one that takes place.
This one
is all sort of the Baldur's Gate-y stuff. So like,
okay, yeah,
Avernus and then Baldur's. There's some stories in Baldur's Gate, and
I guess I've heard that some people are into Baldur's Gate right now.
People like Baldur's Gate.
It's apparently a thing.
Yep.
Anyway, but so we're doing like we compile these so that we have a staff pick every single day. And it's a little short write-up, and I think they're pretty cool. Worth checking in on each day.
So if you're not checking our Facebook every day, you should.
Yeah, and if you missed them, go back and just, you know, scroll back a little bit. Yep. Doom scroll it.
Yep. all right. We got the newest in games. We got the newest expansions for Everyday Heroes, which is the inheritor of the D20 Modern for 5th edition. They've done a lot of licensed stuff, Kong of Skull Island, Pacific Rim.
Right, they have these slightly off-the-beaten-path licenses, which are actually pretty cool, like The Crow and Total Recall and stuff like that.
The two new ones are Universal Soldier and Rambo.
Yep. You know what? In almost all these cases, I've actually never seen Universal Soldier. I don't know anything about it. But when I've skimmed through, their lore has been cool. Like, they took the lore of The Crow movie and they expanded it to include these other sort of mystic spirit animal kind of ideas that you can have that are not crows, but also you can dive into the rest of the lore of it. And same with Total Recall. Yep. I am curious to see what lore they build out in Rambo. Do they draw anything from the weird cartoon of the 80s? How do they expand it out? I'm sure not everybody plays Rambo in it, so you got to be part of like Rambo's cool team of dudes who blow stuff up.
Has to play that the general.
Yeah. Oh, wait, the general
or
the colonel?
The colonel who recruits him.
Maybe
it's more of a thinky thing where you're all parts of Rambo's subconscious directing him.
I play and portray his aggression. I'm his guilt.
I am.
I am Rambo's lust.
I am Rambo's lust. I am Rambo's appetites.
Listen, Rambo dated one or two people in the movie didn't he?
I don't know.
I honestly just remember First Blood and everything else kind of just like bleeds
I've
together.
I've never seen Rambo.
Technically, First Blood is the only really great one in it. Randy, at some point,
Brian Dennehy in that, is that?
Yeah, Brian Dennehy in the entire town of cops.
Right, the entire town of cops.
Like he doesn't actually physically fight Brian Dennehy in it, but Brian Dennehy is a mean sheriff in it.
He is.
Randy, it is the one that is not like any of the others.
I know.
He doesn't just go through and just kill dudes, but he does kill dudes. If you're not a fan of law enforcement, I recommend it because man, oh boy. But it's also it's weird that the first Rambo is like anti-Rambo.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, we digress. They made these everyday hero books, and they're cool. And those ones are out this week.
Yeah. We got a couple things from Kickstarter that are pretty cool. We got Stifling Darkness, which is a one versus many cooperative game where you're basically one person is like a monster or a killer.
Yep.
Everyone else, and it uses a flashlight mechanic.
Yes.
So you can only see what's in your flashlight beam.
Right, I actually am very curious about this game.
So is this like a hidden movement type game?
Yes.
But it sounds like there's like that added suspense of like moving a flashlight around in a scary movie.
So a little bit of Alan Wake?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Something like that.
That's sort of their big mechanic, it's kind of neat. And then there's an expansion that comes with like extra flashlight templates, two more characters, and a little mini expansion that you get for free because we got the Kickstarter edition. So worth checking out. And then we also got the game that I was very excited about. I played this at Gamma a couple years back. It is a new game from Elizabeth. liking her last name now, Hargrave.
Okay.
She is the designer of Wingspan.
Oh, that's pretty notable.
And this is her, like, third game or fourth game. I actually like this better than Wingspan, which I quite like.
Elizabeth Hargrave and Jeff Frazier.
Yes.
Well, what was the game? What's the name
of it? It's called The Fox Experiment. This is about an actual thing that happened in Russia where they were breeding foxes.
Yes, they were trying to domesticate them or something, right?
So you are breeding foxes for different, and you have these little cards, and you sort of like, you'll breed foxes for different attributes and that kind of thing.
Oh, that's weird.
It is weird. It's super fun.
I have played some also many weird board games, and a lot of times, the interesting thing about like the European board game style is that they'll have... I don't know kind of what comes first, the thematics or the mechanics and stuff in these games, but I'm like, I have seen the most amazing stuff done with weird premises, so like that's not weird at all, actually.
I think it's like, we have these mechanics, what can we do with... How about
fox breeding?
Yes!
But it's a really good game. There's a lot of different things you do to make it work. And what's notable, we have the Kickstarter edition, which comes with nicer components, little plastic minis, and... If you're the first two people to buy it, you get the wooden meeples as well, the little wooden foxes.
Oh, that's cool looking.
We also have the Kickstarter exclusive 5-6 player expansion, which means that the base game goes 1-4, you get the 5-6 player expansion, you can play up to 6 players. It's a really cool game. It is one of my favorite games of the year. I think people should definitely pick this one up.
And you're wearing a foxtail presently.
I'm wearing a foxtail presently. Yes.
That doesn't have anything to do with the game.
No, it's actually just a cap, coonskin cap.
You're just a fox man. That's Randy's kitsune identity.
Yes. We got back in a game that we had, but I played at BGG called Dice Veggies.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that sounded like a fun game. Did you talk about that?
I did talk about it. It's a dice game. The dice represent different ingredients. You use a little cardboard cleaver to chop dice out of the block that you then use ingredients to make recipes on your cards.
That's very fun.
It's very fun. Very, very light, quick, good game. We got Everdell Farshore, which adds a new island to Everdell.
Okay. Like
new critters and new buildings, that kind of stuff. We got a game called Almost Innocent, which is a social deduction game. Where I think you're trying to prove yourself and your group innocent of a crime.
I love the art style.
Yeah, it looks like fun.
Oh, show it to me afterwards. I want to see that.
We got an expansion for 3,000 Scoundrels, which is a Western game that came out last year called Double or Nothing. We got the new D&D 5e version of Doctor Who called Doctors and Daleks, which is pretty great.
So, this is also something I haven't had a chance to look at. So it's 5E rules.
5E rules.
It's the first that it's done.
Yep.
There's basically the core game, which is like the player's guide.
Yep.
Then there's the Alien Archive.
Yep.
And then an adventure.
Now, let me ask, is this adapting the existing Doctor Who game?
Not really, no. It is the same publisher, but I believe it is a D&D
somewhat rebuilt from the ground up.
Well, the player's guide, the cover has every single doctor, available.
Well, you know what? I want to go like flip through this just to like look at the art and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you can build a companion or you can build a Time Lord.
Oh, really?
As a player, it looks kind of fun.
What if I want to play a Robodog?
I guess you can probably play a Robodog.
I bet there's an option somewhere in there.
Probably,
but it's probably like a companion, an animal companion.
And then we got the Power Rangers RPG, Finster's Monstermatic Cookbook. I know very little about Power Rangers. I guess Finster makes the monsters for Rear Repulsor or something.
Maybe.
Let's just say it's
like their monster book.
Okay, that's cool.
That's a fun idea.
All right, let's talk about comics for the first week of December. And
we have a thematically appropriate kickoff.
Yes, let's start with the weekly comic, issue number one, Batman Santa Claus Silent Night. That's with a K. And And in this comic, we learned that Batman once trained with Santa Claus.
Yes, well, the deal is that Batman trained with the best people in whatever their expert field is.
Yep.
So it makes sense you would. But also, this Santa... I don't know if they're really going to lean into this or not. They probably, for the most part, won't. But DC did promote in one of their solicits that this is the canonical DC Santa Claus, which is not like... the traditional Jolly Elf. It is more like if you read Grant Morrison's Claus comic where it's steeped in like Germanic and Scandinavian lore, and he is like kind of like a hunter, like a woodsman hunter with like kind of ties to like Wotan and stuff like that from Norse mythology and the Wild Hunt and stuff like that. Yep. But I guess the important thing is we all really liked it.
We all really liked yeah. this. There's also a notable guest star from Batman's World, which makes sense. And
it's essentially, there's a kind of a dark, well, it seems dark, but it's not treated too dark. But there is a sort of murder mystery
going
on.
Yeah, there's a good threat.
And there's like a possible supernatural threat. And I don't want to say who the guest stars are, but yes, indeed, Santa will appear and have it prominently in the first issue. There's you kind of find out the lore of the DC take on it here. And let's see, who else is in it? Robin?
Robin, Nightwing, Damian.
Yeah, and they're all used to fun effect. I liked all of them in this.
It felt very classic. It feels like the writer Jeff Parker, who's been around forever, written some great things, doing. Definitely sort of takes the best of and puts it, you know.
Yeah. It was a very pleasant surprise. And, you know, I know we've all been missing Grant Morrison. It came out every December, and we always love to see it. And then it kind of wrapped.
Yep.
And there's some beautiful volumes of it, by the way. Some nice collections that,
Especially one that just hit that it combines all three, highly, of the adventures.
Highly recommended. But because we're not getting any more of it, we're like, oh, we're sad. And now we can be happy because there's something that's in that ballpark.
Yeah.
They even, the artist of that, Dan Mora, I believe, did one of the variant covers
or the
main cover for this. Yeah. So they kind of knew what they were doing.
There's a bit I love in here. Where Batgirl is like, don't you have a big thing coming up? He's like, oh, Christmas. It's fine. It hasn't needed me to happen in centuries.
Yes.
I was like, that's great.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Yes.
Yep. Really a surprisingly recommended book for anybody who is at least open to this concept.
If you're following the Small Titans Beast World crossover, this week are two one-shots. There's going to be some of these World Tour Metropolis, Gotham... where basically they take, like, what's going on in the various cities. This is the Metropolis one. It has Dreamer, John Kent, and I think there's somebody else who's in it. Well, there's also Turtle Boy.
Yes.
So, yeah, if you want to see the Beast World stuff in Metropolis, that is in this issue. And then there is Beast World Waller Rising, which is introducing a new super team. Like Waller's trying to use because the Titans are stepping up the Justice League.
I mean, I recognize some of these as villains she's used in the Suicide Squad before. So there's like, well, Vixen, but Vixen's not a villain, but Vixen, but like Black Manta.
Yep.
Flipping through it, I thought I saw somebody else who was sort of notable, but it's...
It looks like she's going to start her own sort of Justice League, and that is all introduced in this issue.
I'm still making up my mind about that art, but there's individual panels that I really like. I'll say that, and like that's... I don't know why, but what Black Manta has, like, one of the coolest looks.
Yep.
Oh, he always has.
He always has.
Even
as shittily animated by whoever did those. Not Filmation, not Hanna-Barbera.
Wasn't that Filmation? I thought it was.
I don't know. Whoever did Super Friends and all the variants of it. That's some cruddy animation.
DC and Marvel have both been doing a lot of facsimile editions. There are a few this week.
Yep.
Most notably, there is Batman number 401, which is the first part of Batman Year One by Frank Miller and Dave Mazzucchelli.
Yeah, I believe circa 1987,
I'm slipping through
86.
That just Mazzucchelli's artwork is so...
I believe it is his career peak. He got it complete. He kind of almost completely after this and Daredevil Born Again and stuff like that.
He went super indie.
He went super indie, and his style became so pared down that I kind of missed what I liked about him before. You know, not to say that he wasn't, I think, talented at what he was doing.
Just his old stuff is better.
But I liked his old stuff better, and I think Year One is as good as it gets.
Agreed.
And also, like, for a book that is, let's see, 87. So are we coming up on 40 years?
Yeah, coming up on that.
I think it holds up tremendously well, almost not dated at all, because it didn't use the other Bronze Age tropes, like there's no thought balloons and stuff like that. He was moving to captions, narrative captions.
Yeah.
It's set in a kind of slightly out of time, like gritty 70s look that looks like Martin Scorsese movies.
Yeah.
And but it has a timeless quality to it. And it's also like this is the thing that was the formation of all Year One stories basically that came out of this use these kind of elements of rethink.
Yeah.
It would be picked up visually in for Long Halloween,
mm-hmm.
and every like Batman Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yep.
Like, the influence can't be overstated. But it's also just great on its own.
Well, the cool thing is they're also weirdly reprinting each of the issues in the next couple weeks.
So we'll have the entire, yeah. into the entire four issue so, story.
Yeah, a lot of times when they do these facsimiles, it's just an issue that's kind of currently relevant. And Marvel, actually, I don't know why they're doing this one.
And Marvel just did it with... last week and the week before where they reprinted the two-part Days of Future, Future Past.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool to have back in the
day. I agree. It's cool to see these stories, you know, either...
maybe get into some hands of kids who don't know.
Don't do trades.
Yeah, look, here's some real comics without Krakoa. Sorry.
I'm coming around to your train of thoughts.
Well, you know, if nothing else, Krakoa, I think his... maybe overstate its welcome
it's
a little.
It's run its course.
It's run its course, and it's just...
it's run its course.
It's time to kick it to the curb.
Oh, no. Looks like the island's sinking.
Sorry, island's core closed.
The moose out front should have told you. That's a National Lampoon's Vacation joke for people who weren't around in 1983 or whatever.
Let's talk about the book that when Randy and I were ordering books, we were like, this can't be good, right?
We were both
right?
surprised this was good. The Sentry, who is a character that's basically Bendis or Paul Jenkins created Marvel Superman as a sort of a meta character. It had been erased from time.
And that was a really good one.
It was an interesting miniseries. And
there was
Bendis,
a big reveal in it that his worst enemy, the Void, was actually something that was entrapped in himself. He was like a vessel.
You can't have the Sentry without him in the Void, which is why they erased him from time.
And then Bendis brought him back for New Avengers.
And used him as like Marvel Superman.
And it really he's always been, as portrayed, something of a psychologically damaged Superman. Yes.
And I think none of us are particular fans of him.
No, he was killed more recently by Null.
Well, yeah,
in
New Avengers, Sentry rips apart Carnage.
Right.
And in Maximum Carnage number one, or whatever it was, Null, the god of the symbiotes, returned the favor and ripped Sentry apart.
Yeah, honestly, because, you know, as these sort of things go,
revenge.
That's all legit.
Yeah.
I've got to grant
the
it.
The Sentry
to
is dead, but, and also worth noting, you might know if this gang war, but there is an anti cape ordinance in New York City.
Correct.
And so there is a. There is an official police unit that goes around investigating superhero
sightings and stuff.
Apparent crimes division, headed up by Misty Knight.
Misty Knight's narking on her own heroes.
I mean, she was a cop, so
true.
So Jessica Jones, who is the first lady of New York now because she is married to.
Oh, that's
Mayor
wild
Cage.
To think about that.
She's
like
also
it.
Reopening.
She's reopening Alias Investigations as a and. The thing opens, this issue opens, we will get to Sentry, I promise.
Okay.
This issue opens with, she has sent their daughter Dani to, like, work with Luke in his office, and she is driving Luke a little crazy. She's, like, trying to autograph his signed football.
Uh-huh.
And,
I'd also forgotten that
they have a foster son who is a Purple Man kid.
Yep.
Okay. There was a Daughter of the Purple Man way back when that was covered.
But this is one of the kids that they...
one of the kids from, like, Wade's running.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, in the middle of all this, she hears, like, an explosion, and she goes out and finds this building that's been wrecked, and Misty Knight shows up, and she and Misty wind up working together, even though Jessica is not... she can't operate as a vigilante, but she is a private investigator, and she does have superpowers. So the two of them start looking into this thing, and what's going on is there's someone missing, and this is not the first person missing after these superpower events.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like Sentry's powers are reemerging in other people.
Right.
And this is about that. And there's another twist beyond that that I don't want to give away. But the basic premise here is that Sentry's powers are reemerging in multiple people.
Yeah.
Misty Knight and Jessica Jones are trying to track it down. It's a good sort of mystery premise.
It is. I don't know this writer, Jason Liu, but he's like concocted a really good story utilizing a character that is kind of underwhelming in a lot of aspects.
Yeah, I would say if you like things like Supreme Power and things that like trying to look at superpowers from like more of a ground level point of view.
It feels kind of like a Straczynski kind of
it does.
Riff.
It does. It's a really good issue. It's a really good issue.
And I need to read that. I like Misty and I like Jessica Jones.
Yep.
Well,
so.
And I also like the new characters they introduce. They're interesting
characters.
Give them
a chance.
Yeah, maybe.
Then hate them.
Maybe someone can do something good with the Sentry.
I would love it.
Worst character ever.
Another new issue from Marvel this week. This is from the creative team. We're just doing the Captain America book. Kelly and Lanzig. This is Thunderbolts number one. And this is the Thunderbolts that is going to tie into the movie. So it's Winter Soldier, Countess Valentina, Sharon Carter using an old 1940s identity, which is interesting.
Yep.
And Red Guardian.
They're kind of... It's sort of the Winter Soldier's Black Ops team.
Yes. Yeah.
They are meant to kind of do some the dirty deeds. And specifically, they're going to target, like this, according to their plan, the big names. Red Skull, Kingpin, Doctor Doom, untouchable bad guys, yeah. And they're going to bring them down.
Yeah.
And they go after right after the Red Skull in the first issue, yep. So there's an interesting resolution, which I don't want to spoil too much of, but it's interesting.
It's an espionage book. I think if you're liking Avengers Inc., which is doing sort of a mystery investigation, this is kind of in the same vein, taking these characters and do something different with them.
Mm-hmm.
So you might give that a look. Gang War continues in Amazing Spider-Man this week. You see Spidey forming his anti-gang war team.
It's true.
Yep. I see on the cover, She-Hulk has like barbed wire wrapped around her hands for fighting.
And Spidey has a baseball bat.
Jesus.
Things got dark.
Over at Image, we've got Ludric, which is a sort of Conan riff by a new artist. He's a writer-artist. He's been trying to do this for a long time. He did it as an indie book, and then Image picked it up. If you like sort of Conan on his own, you might give this a look. The art is really nice.
Yep, I heard it's like a kind of a Viking metal kind of vibe to it.
Ben Stenbeck, another artist-writer, has a post-apocalyptic thing called Our Bones Dust.
Post-apocalyptic and alien.
An alien, yeah. There is a Hellboy Winter Special, The Yule Cat.
Yep, that was a lot of fun.
Which is fun.
I need to check that out because I somewhat recently, because of internet memes, became aware of the weird Scandinavian Yule Cat, which like is like actually a monstrous cat that like eats people, at least according to the lore, who didn't get like new clothes for Christmas or didn't something
she
like
got,
that.
She got new socks, kids.
Which I feel is like some kind of like anti-poor thing, but I definitely want to see the weird folkloric take that Mignola or whoever writes it would do.
It's Matt Smith.
Yeah, Matt Smith writes and draws. Time Traveler Tales is a spinoff of a popular podcast called Tales from the SMP. Or it's not a podcast, it's a web series.
Okay.
But, it's a cute kids time traveling.
Okay.
And then let's talk about our favorite book this week, I think, which is Transformers number 3.
Yeah. Oh, although, so
I don't want to give anything away.
I have to say the Batman Santa thing was surprisingly good. Might vie for it this week.
But lots of cool stuff.
It's a big... I feel like I can say it's a big action issue.
It is. This is an action set.
Daniel Warren Johnson does fight scenes like nobody else does fight scenes.
I think we can maybe say at this point that one of the characters who's a commonly used Transformer character is not being heavily used, Bumblebee.
Yep.
But that rather, the Cliffjumper, who was kind of the same... Was that basically the same model as a...
Yeah, it was the same toy, just colored
red. The little red, hot-headed dude is the personality, is heavily used in this, and he's kind of... It's like they've moved around some of the pieces on the chessboard of Transformers to give some of the characters who deserved, you know, some more time, but who got pushed to the side by some of the big guns back in the day.
Yeah.
They're giving them their chance, and Cliffjumper is awesome in this. Like, Ravage and, like, Buzzsaw and stuff like that are in it.
Laserbeak.
Whatever. There's two. There is another one, though, right?
No, Buzzsaw is the other one, but he's not in this.
Oh, my God.
Get it right.
They're the same dude.
They are not the same.
They are the same personality. And also, but, like...
You are a cassette tape that turns into a vulture. I am a cassette tape that turns into also a vulture. They are not the same.
But also, like, Soundwave. And I feel like everyone likes Soundwave.
Yes.
One of the things I noticed that they did, which was cool, is that Soundwave's dialogue is written against, like, a blue background.
I actually want to talk about this. You know how I'm usually a... Give me white backgrounds and black text.
You don't like to read the weird lettering.
I don't like the weird lettering. It works for Soundwave because I want to know that he sounds different.
You know that he has the cool Soundwave voice.
Yep.
Nick, you were about to mention another character who...
Skywarp.
And that's one... You
he's
know,
one of the Seekers.
He's one of the Seekers, one of the jet fighters that... and usually the others are all just kind of grunts and Starscream is the only one you care about. Or at least that's how it was on the cartoons.
Right.
But I will say, first of all, you know, they all got cool write-ups and file cards and stuff like that.
They did.
Anybody can have a cool story to tell.
They all have missiles or projectiles that can hit you from, like, 30 miles away.
No love for Thundercracker, though.
I love Thundercracker. I played him in a Transformers game.
Transformers RPG I ran. So, I guess Nick is the exception to the no Thundercracker love rule. But Skywarp was the first Transformers toy I bought back in the day. I didn't even know what was going on, and I thought Decepticons was that there was pronounced Deceptions. So I called them Deceptions. Anyway, so I have been very happy to see him, and he is like, they are dangerous. You know, we talked about this. It's like, when you see these guys, there is that sense of like, it's almost like the agents of the Matrix. You need to run. Yeah. If you're an Autobot, you need to get out.
Yep.
And that's a pretty cool feeling that they do there, but there's some great action in this. And there's some, also some, I don't want to, again, I won't say too much, but Optimus Prime does some crazy shit in it.
Yep. Yeah, the act, we talked a little bit about this off mic, basically that, like, when you, sometimes you go see superhero movies, and you can't help but compare the comics and be like, oh man, why can't they do these fight scenes like they do in movies so well in the comics? Like, a lot of
bland in the comics.
A lot of people don't do great fight scenes. There are great fight scenes in Transformers. He's using the
you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
They're cool ideas.
Yep.
People get their moments. Like, people, even people who get taken down in a fight, you're like, they did not get punked out.
No.
So yes, that's Transformers 3. What do we have on the back issue shelf if people want to get into
one
this?
Yeah, one and two. Well,
everybody, you can get caught up.
Yep.
Anybody can just walk in the door and get caught up.
I also want to say, a lot
of
times,
we should put these up at the front of the store if we ever, well, I know it's full, but
a lot of times when we see Transformers movies and stuff, we're like, we just want to see the robots. We don't care about we don't care about the human characters.
They're doing a good job.
A great job with the human characters too. I think the kind of backstory they've given Sparkplug. Spike's dad is really good. The new girlfriend is fantastic.
Yep. And they don't overly play him up, but they get their moments.
Yeah.
But I mean, it all works. This is really just some fantastic comic.
Dave, you wanted to mention the H.P. Lovecraft Shadow Over Innsmouth manga?
Yeah, and I have not gotten to read it yet.
But this is a creator who's done a bunch of stuff.
Right. The most notable one that I see that we most often seem to have in stock is a two-volume set of At the Mountains of Madness from H.P. Lovecraft. And it is like, as adaptions go, it is one of those like strictly accurate ones. It's obviously there's some fine tuning of it and original dialogue and things like that, but it is like for real events of the books, and like drawn in this like almost, I don't want to say photorealistic style, but it has something of that to it.
Yeah.
Certainly, like, I remember when he was drawing like the mountains and the Arctic scenery and stuff in that, it's like incredibly authentic. And the creatures look amazing and the people look cool and all that stuff. You know, Shadow Over Innsmouth, of course, introduced creatures, the Deep Ones, that would become so iconic that probably any time you're reading about the Sahuagin or whatever they are in D&D, and there's another deep-sea creature, too, they're all inspired by them.
Yep.
But it's also a creepy town where these things inbreed with people, and there's, like, multiple generations of them, and so, like, you have these people who have what they call the Innsmouth look, which is, like, this sort of sallow, fish-like skin and face. I am extremely looking forward to reading this because he did such a good job with the other stuff I've read. It seems a little odd, but manga is a good place to go to for Cthulhu adaptations, Lovecraft adaptations.
Also worth mentioning, I think we all really like in the new Birds of Prey.
Yep.
Issue 4 sees Barda throwing down with Wonder Woman, and it's pretty great.
It's a big battle on Themyscira.
Yep.
And the whole time that they've been building up to this infiltration, they've tried to avoid Wonder Woman getting involved, even though, of course, they did the thing we want, like, which is in the first issue, they're like, why don't we just tell her what we're doing?
Yep.
It's a kind of a good thing that we're doing, but she might have... But the thing is, they knew that she might have some legitimate reasons for stopping them, or things that would seem legitimate to her, and that if she becomes aware of it, then there's no getting past her. If she doesn't want them to do it, she will wreck them. And so they're treating Wonder Woman the way people often treat Superman. Like, you can't go up against him if you're, you know, on the other side. But it happens in here. It goes down, and it's almost the same thing we were talking about in Transformers. It's
the actions.
Blows are traded, but also cool action scenes.
Yep.
And no one is punked out, and Wonder Woman is a badass in it.
Yep.
But, like, at the same time, when Barda goes toe-to-toe with her, also a badass.
That's cool,
It continues to be good stuff. And that cool kind of slightly retro style of art, it's somewhere between, like, a Bruce Timm clean line style and a little bit of Kirby energy, sure.
Yeah. That's Leonardo Romero, really enjoying
it. It's good.
I continue to enjoy Fantastic Four and Daredevil, which have new issues this week. Usagi Yojimbo Ice and Snow, which nice to have that back. There's a new Avengers and a new Fire and Ice, which has Lobo coming to Smallville to deal with Fire and Ice. Y'all have anything else in your stack?
I'll say that there's a Creepshow holiday special that hit this week. Second issue of the Batman new Joker storyline.
Right.
Featuring the mini iterations of Zur-En-Arr.
Right, and I believe this is somehow going to be the first time any comic other than the special has followed up on the three Jokers concept.
Right.
I don't know what they're going to do with it, but I know that this storyline is going to somehow follow up.
And I was jumping into some random DC books, and I just want to say the first story arc of Shazam, Mark Waid and Dan Mora's book completes, and it is a delight of a finale.
Yeah, so I'm gonna. You talked about this. Sounded like a lot of fun.
I'm gonna try to go back and read the whole story because I think I read the first two and then I got sidetracked like a lot of people by the horror thing.
Yeah,
and I want to go back and see.
Mark Waid does love that DC Universe playground.
He does. Yes. He's great at it.
All right, we're gonna take a break and then we're gonna come back and talk about a bunch of trailers. All right, we have a few trailers to talk about. Let's start with the TV ones that are coming up. The video game to TV, which we have two of them.
Okay, what do we got first?
One is Fallout, which is, this is on Prime.
Yep.
It is from the creators of Westworld.
So Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy.
But also the creator of the video game is listed as one of the creators.
Yeah,
that's
which
the
is...
the thing they did with Last of Us.
Yep, which is particularly good news.
Big difference,
it
actually.
It does.
It, this was the kind of trailer that is meant to, like... not really show story so much as like a glimpse of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Scary bad guys, mutated monsters, someone leaving a vault.
Yep. I was going to say, I think I've played at least three of these games. I've never once completed it. I've never once gotten past like maybe like the 4 hour mark.
I've played a handful of them, but I've never played all the way through.
I think they're good games, and I love the visual.
And the lore is really cool, what I know of it. I'm like you. I haven't played much of them, but I actually, I could say I think the Fallout setting is very cool.
But this trailer basically hits every note you want for like a Fallout game.
It has dog meat.
Does have dog meat.
And it shows the pre-war world.
It does.
Shows Brotherhood of Steel.
The Brotherhood of Steel, which is their big armored mech people.
Who's...
Walton Goggins
as the ghoul. He's like this creepy, no-nose, skull-faced guy, kind of red skull-looking dude.
He's like a bounty hunter, right?
And that's an original character, right? That's not like from the games.
I don't know.
But I think it is. Like, people have been talking about it, like they're calling him the ghoul as if it's like a new character. So I think it is.
Walton Goggins loves being in random movies, especially like pop culture movies.
Yeah, he was in G.I. Joe. Yeah.
As
Ant-Man. The warden.
Ant-Man.
As an Ant-Man. Yep.
Yeah, he's good at it. And this actually sounds like a more involved role.
Yeah.
Like one that's probably going to be one of the notable characters, one of the notable supporting characters. There's a female lead who you see wearing the traditional vault jumpsuit, that blue and gold sort of thing.
Walking out into the wasteland.
Yep. And little glimpses of, I guess, probably some of the vault tech and stuff like that that people know so well.
Yep.
Did we see the Pip-Boy?
I don't think we saw Pip-Boy, actually.
But obviously that's going to be a thing. I'm sort of surprised they didn't, but I bet they're saving up. You know what would be cool? Do the Pip-Boys also function as, like, sort of like little PDA sort of things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if they did a trailer that was like a, so you've left the vault, kind of, you know, one of those sort of things.
Fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the equivalent of the Mr. DNA sequence, which they evoke to an old 50s cartoons.
But, I mean, they also have Kyle MacLachlan. You briefly see him. This looks really good, I have to say. The trailer is really well made.
Would we get a sense of, like, what the goal of the character is? Like, or the, like what the story is?
I think it's, like, a vault that's been closed for so long, while others have, like, opened and decayed. This one opens and a girl just walks into the wasteland. And what does she find?
I wonder if there, like, is sort of... I think it'd be cool if there were sort of specific goals at first. It's like, okay, we need to just do a little... 10 miles out. Anything alive? Anything we can use?
I'm sure there's some instigating thing that makes her leave the vault.
Yeah, or we need to go and get more blank Or we're going to die.
My father is dying. I need to go get...
Right. We need to get some more air filters, actually. The air is a little stifling in here. It's a little dusty.
We need you to find us a yo-yo.
There's also the...
We need you to find us some human flesh to consume.
The old school music.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. I always have to... Fallout has to have the kind of tinny sort of old music. And they accomplished. Basically, you could argue this is a checklist of things, but it looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It may have been a checklist, but it looks like it has some story and heart to go with it. So,
yeah.
And I have a lot of faith in Nolan and Joy. They tend to, even though I got off of Westworld, yeah. I fell off of after second season.
But before that, they had done Person of Interest.
Yep.
Which I think people were fans of.
Yep, it was a good show.
So yeah, it looks good.
Broadly, positive thoughts.
Yeah.
And a setting that we would like to, I think, see developed. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, if I'm not gonna be able to find 80 hours or 100 hours to go play the game, right. I'm like, I could enjoy a show with a cool setting.
Yes. Yeah.
We saw the trailer for Halo Season 2, which I think everyone in this room liked Halo Season 1.
I did.
But the internet hated it.
I was trying to remember actually what happened at the very end of Halo Season 1.
Either.
I thought
here you are, Master Chief, you get the Halo.
I thought he was on some planet and he was dying and Cortana took him over.
Man, I don't remember.
I missed the last episode. So we liked it, but not quite enough to remember it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I thought it was really good. I actually thought early on it was one of the better video game adaptations. This was before, of course, Last of Us.
Yeah,
right. Last of Us has a particularly high level of writing on it.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was well done. It's just that it subverted some expectations as far as, like, the game traditions. And, well, you know, I will say this.
It gave us an actual character beyond just Master Chief. It was...
You know, it's interesting. I think people will probably point to, like, stuff like Judge Dredd as a case where it's like, look, you can have this dude wear his helmet for 24/7 and never get it, develop his character, other than he occasionally is like, let this guy go. But here's the thing. Judge Dredd is like a satirical character.
Yes. Yeah.
And, like, the whole... that is, like, the kind of the basis of the comic is the kind of people around him... kind of bouncing off of him and how he reacts to them. I think Master Chief, for an ongoing series, probably did need the personality thing. And by having him explore his past and find out about, like, memory implants and things like that and memory wipes, the series arguably has, like, an anti-establishment, kind of anti-military criticism built into it, which, you know, I imagine people were like, but I like to play that game and go shoot thing.
Yeah.
Well, that said, they did shoot thing in it.
Yeah, but also Season 2 looks like a lot more shooty things.
It does.
Based on this teaser, which doesn't tell us a lot of story, but there's a lot more, you know, you're overwhelmed by the Covenant.
What is the actor in this? Is it Pablo Shriver?
One of the Shriver. Is it Pablo Shriver? Yeah, it's Pablo Shriver.
He's really good. I think he does a really good job, but he's also, we also glimpsed, like, Bokeem Woodbine again, who I thought had a fascinating character in the first season.
Who was the guy who was doing the speech or whatever in it?
That was a new character.
Okay. He reminded me a little bit of the younger, who's the guy who played Felix Leiter in the new Bond movies?
Jeffrey Wright.
Like a younger Jeffrey Wright. Yeah. That's kind of what he looked like. But yeah, he was sort of emphasizing the, you know, the importance of them holding the line, getting people out, and even if they fall, of, you know, being remembered with honor and stuff like that. So the kind of had that vibe of the big self-sacrifice thing that is, you know, very much part of a lot of military ethos.
Yeah.
And I would be curious, you know, do they continue their through line? Are they still going to be subversive? Are they going to be subversive but a little in a different way? Are they going to be less subversive?
I think they have to follow the same story. So
I'm sure they'll follow the basics, but you can change direction. We see it in comics all the time.
True.
Yeah. A new writer will come in and just change the vibe of a book.
I think there will be kind of like a schism, because I remember at the ending now that they were fighting. Was it the Reach? Is it the Reach?
Well, there was a thing where, like...
Is it the Reach? I don't know.
Whatever they're...
The Covenant.
The Covenant. Basically, the big alien civilization, I think everything kind of fell through, and they ended up, like, fighting them at the very end. So,
right.
I think they are coming to basically annihilate Earth, and they have to sort of... Even though they are disparate parties, I think, like, the scientist who created the Spartan series... I forget her name, but she's really good in this.
Oh, yeah. Natasha Hentress, right?
Yeah, Natasha Hentress.
Am I correct? So Master Chief had, like, removed some sort of implant in him or something like that,
yeah.
Which was, like, the control chip or whatever. That would, like, let, what, Cortana and other things, people shut him down and control him.
Yeah.
And, like, some of the other Spartans were trying to do that. At least one other one did it.
Yeah. The lady one was.
Yeah. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
It made them less, like, good, because they weren't, like, completely focused and, like, without emotion. They weren't, like, basically Terminators. They were a little bit more.
Right. So the higher-ups were like, we just want robots.
Yeah, just want robots we can control and kill. Yeah.
I forget what happened with the story of the sort of the infiltrator who was the representative from the, was it the Reach? Is that what they call
it? No.
I think she really was in love with Master Chief, and I think she ended up betraying him for some reason, because, like...
Well, she was sent to infiltrate, and, like...
Well, I know, but then there was, like, towards the end, she actually fell in love with Master Chief, and then, of course, she was utilized by the military-industrial complex, like, turned against them again, so... I don't know if they're gonna
watch the last couple episodes. And
I remember really liking it. Yeah, I'm very pro Halo.
It's a good time. It's been a little bit. It's been a bit.
I'm glad it's coming back.
Yeah.
We got the trailer for Godzilla X Kong.
Yep. I don't know. I think that's how you say it. I
don't know.
Godzilla times Kong.
Godzilla times Kong.
Could be, because aren't there two Kongs in this?
Looks like there's two Kongs.
Yep. There's a big Kong. It's some sort of
there's Godzilla Kong.
Super Kong. He's the bad guy, right?
He seems to be the bad guy. And I've heard that there's at least one other unseen as yet Titan in here. I don't know. Like, that's just rumor mill stuff, but I think it's one of those everybody knows it kind of thing. Like, maybe they don't know who it is, but there's going to be some other one.
Maybe we'll find out why Godzilla glows pink now.
Yeah, it's because
he was previously like glows blue.
Magenta-ish. I think there's center of the world stuff, and he probably, like, eats some center of the world crystals or something.
Sure. little center of the world morsel.
This is I am on in a Godzilla group on Facebook, and it's kind of right now. Godzilla's having a moment, as we said earlier. There's actually fairly successful comics going on right now, new miniseries and stuff. For the last
and they've come up with some really good collections for like $20. That are best.
Yeah, they're very legit. The Legendary movies they found their footing. They're doing well. And then there's Monarch, the TV show, and from Japan comes Godzilla Minus One. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And everybody is saying that is a great callback to like the original one, original Godzilla movie, where he's like this really terrifying force of nature that's just killing people right and left.
Wasn't there another one like last year? Wasn't it Shin Godzilla?
It was a couple years back.
Well, there's always the Japanese stuff going on. I'm just less aware of it.
Yeah. But I just know that
Godzilla Minus One definitely broke out, and I think Shin Godzilla was liked, but like there was some controversies within it. You know, Godzilla fans are just like superhero fans or any other fandom where there's schisms. Sometimes there's people who try and gatekeep. I've seen people who are like, well, the Legendary Pictures are like kiddie stuff, and what do you call it? Godzilla Minus One is the real Godzilla.
Sure.
And I'm like, it seems like that is definitely one of these ones where everybody I'm seeing is light who's seen Godzilla Minus One loves it. But it doesn't seem that it has to come at the expense of some fun Godzilla movies. Yeah. No, and the Legendary movies look to deliver on the big monster fights.
Yeah, I like the Legendary movies. I like them a lot. I watched most of them multiple times. You're a
fiercest supporter of them. A staunch advocate. So in this one, though, you do see, among other things, Kong from the previous ones still has the big sort of...
axe,
a gauntlet of some sort.
That Godzilla can supercharge with his breath.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
See more Hollow Earth.
Is the spike on the axe? Is that like a Godzilla plate?
I believe it is.
Yes, I think that's right.
That's why it can.
Is he from Proto Godzilla? Like his Godzilla's granddaddy from inside?
Oh, I thought it was actually from Godzilla. It fell off.
Oh,
they
like rope tied it on and stuff. Yeah. That would make some sort of sense.
But anyway, they're going to team up, and when Godzilla...
But he's also got, like, a gauntlet. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of gauntlet.
Yeah.
It's a new thing. And there's more stuff with their Hollow Earth
made from the bones of John C. Reilly.
the secret civilization that's inside the Earth.
Yep.
There does seem to be a sort of Uber Kong there, who's maybe bigger than any Titan we've seen so far.
There's also a baby Kong.
And there is a baby Kong. Is that presumably... he's the same coloration, I think, as Big Scary One. So is he going to be, are they going to save the son of the tyrant Kong.
Maybe so.
And he perhaps will join them.
Will the humans take the baby Kong?
Why did you say that name?
Why did you say Kong?
And then, of course, Godzilla gets involved.
The culminating in a somehow ridiculous but also, I thought, very fun sequence of Godzilla and Kong running side by side, sort of like superheroes, charging at top speed, Godzilla charging up. Oh, and there was also a bit in there where Godzilla, when he fires up the now magenta glowing spikes and gets ready to breathe, there's a very cool sound effect they have that sounds like some kind of like generator powering up. Yeah. That you're like, oh, he's going to incinerate something.
The sound design on those are a lot of fun. Yeah, the people who got to, like,
the soundscapes.
Yeah, create all of the Titan noises and stuff.
Anyway, I normally am not a particular fan of these movies, but they've kind of got me following Monarch. I want to see Minus One. It's too good to, it sounds like, to pass up. Uh-huh. And that's a good time to hit me up with a trailer for one of these. I don't know that this will be any better than Godzilla vs. Kong previously, or what was the last the one that had, like,
that was the Ghidorah? Last one. Godzilla vs. Kong was the last one.
That was the last one.
Destroy All Monsters one before
Destroy
that.
Destroy All Monsters, I guess, that had Mothra and King Ghidorah and all that stuff. And those movies all had some sort of problems for me, but were also pretty watchable and did deliver multiple times throughout on some cool stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty open to it here.
All right, let's talk about the Furiosa trailer.
Yeah, let's just quick go through the binary thing we have here. The original Fury Road, Mad Max Fury Road. Randy, I think of us three, I think you liked best, and you were still You were still something of a casual.
I'm a casual fan.
Nick, I think you liked it least.
I liked it least, but I watched it again probably like 2 years ago, and I liked it better.
Okay.
I still probably am the like at least, because...
Okay.
So that means Nick hates it,
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, and the binary system.
Yeah.
And Dave, it's just okay.
I think it's just okay. I like parts of it. But you know what's weird, and it felt the same in this one, which, by the way, this is an origin story for Furiosa. Yeah. They build it as her odyssey... which I don't know how literally they're taking that, but of course, in the actual Odyssey, you know, Odysseus has been off at war, at the Trojan War, and then has this, like, cursed, because he stabbed a Cyclops.
No, that's not what caused the curse, right?
I think it was. Polyphemus's, I think Poseidon cursed him.
Oh.
Yeah. He wasn't. That. Yeah. It's because it's hubris thing there. He told him, like, oh, he's like, who stabbed me? And he's like, it's I. But then he, like, when he's sailing off, he tells him, and Polyphemus is like, hey, Dad, Poseidon, could you fuck
Dad,
this dude up?
Odysseus stabbed me.
Yeah, and so then he cursed him with wandering for, like, 7 years
like,
or whatever it was. And, right, so
it seems like something George Miller would do a heavy metal adaptation of.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, also, it's like she lost her parents...
Right.
And there's a, like, she's been taken by a Morton Joe. It looks like basically it's going to be a prequel story of her and how she became this badass.
Yep. But they did say, like, she's trying to find her. It's about her struggle to get home. And
they outright say Odyssey.
I suspect it may be one of those things where it's like, oh, she gets home and it's a pile of trash and it's ruins or whatever. And she's like, maybe the true home was the friends we made along the way.
And there's suitors everywhere.
Now, here's the question. Will Mad Max show up at all in this?
I don't think so. It's just called Furiosa.
It would, since it's a prequel and she met him for the first time when she was older, it wouldn't make sense. Unless there's, like, side events going on and we see glimpses of it. In which case, you know, that'd be fun. Maybe she never meets him. She doesn't
notice. Because isn't it called, like, Furiosa, a Mad Max story?
I guess. But,
I didn't notice.
That was just called Furiosa.
Just to give the name to the tapestry of it all.
Yeah.
But you know what's weird, and the thing I don't like about it, but I, you know, Road Warrior is one of my all-time favorite movies, like top 10 kind of movie.
Yep.
Not
enough kids with boomerangs.
Yeah, it says Furiosa, a Mad Max saga.
Oh, interesting. I have no idea. Then you know that then that may just be literally it's the name of the saga, but it doesn't mean Mad Max is going to be in all of it.
Right.
The original
Road Warrior.
It kind of has essentially realistic visuals in the sense of, like, that looks like an actual real desert in Australia where they filmed it.
Yep.
Here everything is, like, kind of has a heightened look, like, that looks, to me, honestly, too filtered. There's hyper-orange sand and stuff like that.
Oh.
I don't like the new look of these movies.
I actually really like the new look.
It's not that it's not, like, a well-handled aesthetic, but I feel like almost the vehicles are too samey. They look like fantasy vehicles, where the originals, while they looked scary and stuff like that, didn't have, like, such a... I feel like there's an aesthetic imposed a little bit on them in the current one.
Yeah.
And it's a little... It's almost, like, a little too wild. The other ones almost look like the original, like, stuff that you could... Ways people might really mod their cars, as opposed to, like, the weird porcupine cars and stuff that they occasionally do. Beyond that, that's just kind of my general vibe on it. Honestly, thematically, conceptually, I like a lot of it. I just don't think the writing is as good as it was. Like, and I know there's not these are not dialogue heavy movies, but conceptually, I don't think it's as good as Road Warrior, and I don't see any particular reason to think that this one will be different. But at the same time, I'm not, like, against them. I'm glad people are enjoying them. I'm glad they've got a badass female hero who's, you know, has some good thematics to her story.
Anya Taylor-Joy this time.
Taylor-Joy plays the... Yeah, I should have said that earlier. She plays the young Furiosa. It's the role Charlize Theron did.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The villain in this is Lord Dementis, who is played by Chris Hemsworth.
Seems to be doing a riff on Mel Gibson.
A little bit. He's Australian. Isn't he Australian?
He is, but the hair and the beard look very Mel Gibson-y.
Like Mel Gibson in his peak crazy modes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think would be interesting.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun. That's quite the full circle thing.
A little bit of a thematic thing.
George Miller seems like he is a much more thoughtful and progressive guy than Mel Gibson overall.
Yes. Even though it's a hard bar to clear.
Their most famous works, some of their most famous works, were their collaborations.
Yep.
But, one of these guys I like.
Like
one
when
of them...
Mel Gibson played the pig in Babe.
That's right. That's right. You never saw such a mullet on a pig.
Yeah, I don't know if this is ultimately going to be for me, but I know George Miller will make this sort of a spectacle for the eyes.
It also seems like one you want to see in the theater.
Yeah, that's probably true. It's one of those where even if I don't watch it, I wish it well.
Yeah, I agree.
I do generally approve of all post-apocalyptic Australian car fights as a general rule.
So specific.
I'm one of the weird people who like the original Mad Max more than I like the subsequent ones.
Do you just say that to be different, Nick, or do you actually believe it?
I actually believe it.
Mad Max is boring.
Mad Max is a boring thing about people just driving around a small town, and every once in a while they have a fight in the road.
I just like it. It's very different. Road Warrior's good. Road Warrior's, if not great, but I still like the original better.
You know, the bad guys in that are really, they're pretty close to just hooligans who are like, hey, old man, at the counter, guess what? I'm going to take your candy bar. And and he's like, I guess I've got to take it because they've got a pistol.
The movie was made for like $22, I think.
The movie was made for $22. And then, somewhere near towards the end, they start getting a little bit of the trappings of it.
Yeah.
They were really scared of biker gangs in the 70s.
They were.
It's a big thing.
It's a big thing.
All right. We got a trio of horror movie trailers to discuss. Let's start with Imaginary, which actually we watched a couple weeks ago and forgot about.
Yes.
Not because it was bad.
No, actually it's quite good. It's another Blumhouse movie. They say it's like the producers of M3 again.
Yep.
And this looks in the same vein. It is about a girl, a mom who moves with her daughters back to her old childhood home.
Yep.
And she finds her abandoned teddy bear, who was her imaginary friend.
Yep.
Who maybe is haunted by some kind of spirit, and her little girl starts playing with her new imaginary friend.
Yep. And the imaginary friend, like, seems to blame the mom for having abandoned her. So they're going to deal with some thematics about that, too. One of the things I like about Blumhouse movies is that even these kind of lighter ones like this or Megan, they usually have some kind of somewhat interesting thematic where they can dig in just a little bit. You know, you're not, and I know this is not going to be a super deep exploration,
right.
But there's enough there. You know, the mom and Megan, who was like, you know, what is it? She's a stepmom.
Because
she was the aunt. Yes.
Yeah, she was the aunt who had to kind of adopt her after the parents died.
The girl from Get Out.
And was clearly not ready for it, and that was kind of that was her character arc, was kind of trying to figure out, can I possibly deal with a kid when I am not a person who really likes kids much at all. So here we're going to have, of course, the classic story of man versus childhood death teddy bear.
Yeah, that's one of the big ones, man versus nature.
Yep, Man versus himself.
Man versus himself, and Man versus Evil Teddy Bear.
Man versus Evil Teddy Bear.
Yeah, it's a classic.
They're playing that old 60s Motown song, yeah. Ditch My Imagination, yep. But they do that thing like, you know, this is, honestly, it's a little tropey, but yeah, it's like distorted and slowed down, so it sounds all creepy. And it's one of those trailers that, like Mithrigan, has stuff that's like kind of campy and funny, like somebody walks in front of the teddy bear, and as they, after their shadow goes in front of the camera, the teddy bear's head is turned a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's funny, you laugh because it's ridiculous looking, but they're also making it pretty spooky looking. But I think it's going to be a good thrill ride kind of ridiculous movie.
It's playing on kind of the Chucky and Annabelle.
Absolutely.
It looks like a lot of fun.
It does look fun.
This one I will definitely
A whole new generation can get traumatized by their toys. Like, all the 80s kids were traumatized by Chucky. We need people now to be afraid of both their teddy bears, their potential dolls like Megan, and in one of the other trailers we're going to talk about, their outdoor pool.
Let's talk about Night Swim.
Okay, Night
be
Swim.
Be afraid of your pool. Your pool is haunted.
Yes. Who is there anybody in particular doing this one?
I don't know if the director, Wyatt Russell's the dad in it, but it
Who's
is
Wyatt Russell.
He's Kurt Russell's son in Monarch.
It's that dude. Okay, yeah.
So this is about a haunted pool.
Yeah,
which
haunted pool.
Sure, I haven't seen a movie done
it's
this.
It's kind of a nice big outdoor swimming like backyard swimming pool. I mean, and
new family moves in, but it was basically drained and said to have not been in use for quite some time. Yep.
And there's like, and, you know, the movie shows like one or two small incidents at first, like someone's reaching into the drain thing to trap to clean it out.
I have a pool, and I sometimes reach in there, and I always have this weird thing about like a snake being in there.
Yeah,
because I know that happens.
What if your pool is haunted, Nick?
I mean, sure,
something to consider.
I mean, my niece has said that there are ghosts in the bottom of my pool. I don't know.
Really?
All right.
She did actually.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's fine.
That's a kind of a cool way to imagine it. It makes it sound like the bottom is like some very far off
land.
Well,
the way she said they were the ghosts that would basically push you up if you were like drowning.
Oh, so
they were nice ghosts.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool.
Nice one does not seem nice.
No, this does not seem to be haunted by good ghosts.
They're bad ghosts.
But it also looks a little play on like Amityville, where like the water is actually like running through the house and sort of possessing like the father, Wyatt Russell, into doing some messed up stuff.
This one looked extremely silly to me.
It looked like a jump scare movie.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say.
And it could be one of those fairly satisfying jump scare movies, or it could be a pretty middling one. Yeah. I didn't get great vibes either, but I thought it was okay.
It's Blumhouse. I'll give it a shot.
It is Blumhouse too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they like to throw out from the makers of Mithrigan.
Right. Those producers are going to be on everything forever now.
I think it's produced by James Wan, the person behind Insidious.
Which means James Wan passed by the set at one point and was like, this looks good.
The person behind Aquaman 2.
I don't have high hopes, but sure. We'll give it a shot. I like horror.
And the last thing was the ISS trailer.
This surprised me.
This is interesting.
It's a bizarre concept
grim, honestly.
Because this is based, 89?
It's an alternate 1980s, basically.
Yeah, first of all, it starts with that old Scorpion song, Winds of Change, which was, very emblematic of the fall of Russia and the Berlin Wall and the sort of... essentially, in some ways, the Cold War thawing.
Yeah.
And so you see the International Space Station, real thing, and Americans and Russians meeting there, and the song is playing, and they're jokingly, they're singing along, and
they're
it's kind of goofy.
Like a dinner.
But they're having their moment, and they seem pretty happy. And they're looking out, sort of the bay window or whatever, and nukes start going off.
They're basically it looks like Earth has been, the nuclear war happened and Earth is destroyed, and they're not getting responses from the ground. It's a great opener.
Yeah.
And then the premise they have is that basically they've gotten orders from whatever's remaining.
Basically both
to
sides.
Take the station.
Yeah.
Which, I do say one thing of the problem is I'm like, so you're telling me the International Space Station is going to be a very important thing to this completely devastated. Like, what good does that have you to
They've
do?
Got some cans of ravioli up there, Randy. I need to get that down to the surface.
Get the ravioli down to the surface.
The president is hungry for ravioli.
But, leaving that aside, as a paranoia of they're getting the same orders, we have to assume these people who are our friends are now our enemies. It could be a very cool, like, tense thing.
And also several members of the cast of The Newsroom is in this. The guy from the mute killing movie that was done by Flanagan.
Oh, okay.
Hush. Yeah, Hush. Yep. I couldn't think of that name.
Good name.
But I don't know. I thought this was a really well-done trailer.
It's interesting. I don't know that I can see so many ways that it doesn't work that I'm not sure if I'm, like, excited for it, but it's an
interesting
trailer.
Maybe see how the reviews are turning up on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, now that there's been more sparks of war actually in the world lately, this feels a little morose to me. Like, I don't know if I'm quite in the mood for it.
I get that.
It's a little more fun to play with apocalyptic stuff. Like, that one is, like, quasi-realistic apocalyptic.
Yeah, yeah.
Fallout is crazy fantasy apocalypse. Right. It doesn't really feel like it brings that up as much. But...
Also, in the same way it's going to make Nick scared of his pool, this will make you scared to go on the International Space Station.
Oh, man, I hadn't thought about that. Maybe I shouldn't watch it.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the cool things is, like, you see that they're... As these choices are made, there's things like them sneaking around on the outside, on doing, like, spacewalks.
Yeah.
You know there's going to be something where somebody's, like, crawling around outside there and somebody else is there, and... That'd be the worst way to go. The flung off into space with nothing to stop you, and you just until you just run out of air or whatever. Yeah. Like,
and
just
suffocating your suit.
Yep.
The worst way to go is drown in a haunted swimming pool.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I hope they don't have a swimming pool on the International Space Station. What if they were like, not only did the nukes go off down below, but our space station pool is haunted.
The pool is haunted by an evil teddy bear.
Put them all together.
Yep. So anyway. All right. That's our trailers for the week. I think we're going to call it there.
Yep.
And we'll be back with more next week. And until that time,
yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.